Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893. And if you are feeling a little radio shy, then you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Tonight I have as my guest our once-a-month hostess, co-hostess Suzette Vernon. Suzette's running a little late. So in the meantime, I want to make a few announcements. First, I want to talk to you about our upcoming healing weekend, which will be happening in just a few more weeks. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it's already August, and we're looking at the first weekend in October. So we're looking at 8 weeks from now when women will be gathering to meet each other, greet each other, bond with each other, take care of each other, listen to each other's stories, laugh together, cry together, and start that healing process. I'm expecting to have some wonderful guest speakers on our second day of the conference after we spend a long first day getting to know each other and discovering different routes of support that we can give each other through this journey. So if you are interested in joining me and some of the most wonderful women that you will ever meet, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and in the heading, put down Healing Weekend, and I'll be happy to send you the details. I've been doing the healing weekends 2 years, two times a year, but now we're down to once a year. And it's going to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania this year. And the reason why it's going to be in Philadelphia is because of the fact that it's easier for me to get to. And there's so many things here to see in Philadelphia. So if people want to come in and stay an extra day, they will have a wonderful time. I'm really looking forward to maybe next year going to Nashville, Tennessee. So for those of you who've never seen Nashville and like enjoy watching the television show on TV like I do, and also having a chance to meet Dr. Brian Hooper in person, that's really my motivating factor there. That's probably where I'll be going next spring. So I just wanted to mention that. And hopefully you'll be on that journey too if you can't make it to this one. But every journey that you go to, or every healing weekend, it's really very, very bonding as far as starting your healing road. And it doesn't really matter where you are on the healing journey. Some people are ahead of others. Some people are just starting. Some people are in the middle of ending it, so they want to give support to others. Or some people are getting stuck in it. And I think that last week when I was here with Dr. Brian Hooper, we talked a lot about that, about moving from one stage to another stage and then going back again, because there's never one clear cut, it's over. You know, that takes a long time. I think women really underestimate the time that it takes to heal. And I certainly feel that their husbands really underestimate how much time it's going to take. While I'm waiting for Suzette, I do want to bring up several points. That this week, you know, I was dealing with a situation with a wonderful, wonderful woman, and this is just not unusual, who just found out the news and just is going through discovery of this information with no suspicions of the past that this is what would be hitting her. And there's no way to make this news better, easier, or move it along faster. You know, it's something that has to take its own pace. It's not something that we could say, oh, this is a horrible nightmare, and tomorrow I'm going to wake up and it's going to be over and I'm going to feel differently. It's not. It's a very sad situation. A lot of major adjustments that we have to make and a lot of things that we have to go through. The emotional impact, knowing that our marriages are over, knowing that all our plans for the future have changed, knowing that the happily ever after story we thought we were going to have will not end. And I think that the difference between these kind of divorces and straight divorces is that these are so much more complicated. 50% of all the people in the country are getting a divorce. And I think that it sounds high, because I know when I was growing up, divorce was kind of a hush-hush hidden thing. And I know that my family was one of the first of the divorced families back in the 1960s. And it wasn't very prevalent, and you didn't hear very much about it. And when I would tell people my parents are getting divorced, it was like, wow, like a really big stigma. And people would look at you differently, like, why couldn't your parents stay together? But today, 50% of the population is getting divorced. And these are not people with gay husbands. These are people with straight husbands. And the reason they're getting divorced is because their marriage isn't working out. And it's not that you have signed and sealed in blood that I am stuck in this bad marriage. I mean, people change, people grow, people get married at an early age, they don't exactly know what they're looking for. People marry for all different kinds of reasons, but the point remains that just if a marriage is not working out for you, it doesn't have to be a lifetime sentence. And when people say, oh my God, look at the divorce rate, you know what? I think it's better than having a no divorce rate where people are stuck staying together. As they always say, it's better to come from a broken home than to have to be in a broken home when you're growing up. And I've seen the results of people who stay together for the sake of their children. And very seldom do the children grow up well adjusted. Very seldom do the children feel secure in their growing up. And I don't see too many people, kids who are really disappointed when their parents break up, when there's so many problems in a marriage. You know, kids do adjust, but the kids in these marriages really do suffer. One of the things that I've put together, if anybody's interested in this, I have a little mini newsletter that I have three articles written by children who are adult children now and how they feel about the situation of growing up with a gay parent. and where the secrets were kept and the effects that it had on them. And it's really very, very sad. I mean, for all of these people that... Hello? Just checking that this is still working. Go to the studio. Hi, I hope I'm connected back in. Okay, because there was a little trouble there on my computer. But if you would be interested in reading this article, just let me know. Send me a note to bondk@aol.com. And in case you have any doubts at all as far as whether it's the right thing to tell the children or not, I know that my point of view on this issue has definitely changed over the years. That I always used to tell parents, well, I think it really depends. It's case by case. It's where you live. I was looking at all the wrong reasons because I didn't know. There wasn't enough research out about it. There was not enough information about it. And you have to remember when I learned about my gay husband, it was 1982. There were no computers back then with all this information of where to go for help. And I felt extremely isolated and extremely alone because I was embarrassed to even tell people I had a gay husband. People used to look at me like, what's wrong with you? Are you crazy? You can't be gay. So it was really hard to find help before the age of computers, and that's why I started a local support group. And I started finding people, and we all felt so connected. We would meet every week, and we would try to discuss the issues. But when it came to the children, I was really torn with that, and I came up with the conclusion that for right or for wrong, I started believing that if you have children, a lot of it depends on when to tell them. If they find out when they're younger, it's far less traumatizing because they grow up with the knowledge. If they find out later, that's better because they're mature enough to understand the knowledge. But my issue was when they were teenagers, what do you do? When they were teenagers, I was so worried that this would affect them. They would question their own sexuality because the first thing they would think is, oh, my God, if my dad is gay, am I gay? And that would be a tremendous worryment to them, and they'd have to go through that. And I met many kids at that point of time, now I'm going back again 30-some years ago, who were living through this. And when people would find out that their parents or fathers were gay, they wouldn't allow their friends to play with them. They didn't want people dating them. I remember when my own son was only 4 years old, he was in nursery school and he was sick. And people were petitioning him to leave the school because they knew he had a gay father and they thought he had AIDS. So it was so hard on children back in the 80s and the 90s, but today with gay rights and with gay marriages and gay out in front and gay people in government and television who are out, it's so much easier. I'm not saying that it's easy, but it's easier than it used to be. So back then I was so afraid that when teenagers would find out it would really be devastating to them, but today I've learned through talking to enough kids who are adult children of gay fathers that telling the truth is definitely the only way to go. A few years ago, I had a young lady on my show, and her name was Crystal. And this prompted me to start, you know, a group that just didn't fly over, but not for lack of trying, of adult children of gay fathers because I saw what their needs were and that so many of them were just so distraught from, you know, growing up with secrets in their lives. And it really taught me that these secrets are so destructive to families. And while we're waiting on Suzette, I'm going to read some of this to you. And if you would like to have a copy of it for your own information or for other people to share with this, there's three good articles here. They've been in my newsletters, but it never hurts to hear them again. And it's called And Suffer the Children. It says, over the past 6 years, my thoughts on telling the children about their father's homosexuality has drastically changed. I used to feel there were better times to tell them than other times. I used to think that certain ages were better than others. Certain locations were more accepting than others. I even thought you could conceal the truth, but rather that there were, I never thought you should conceal the truth, but rather there were better ways to, times to reveal the truth. I've changed my feelings since learning so much from our adult children of gay fathers. Here are three articles from my newsletters that should clarify it for either parent. Hopefully your children will realize that millions are out there like them, trying to work their way through this. So the first article came from a young lady named Crystal who came on my radio show, and she was really wonderful in articulating how she felt while she was on my show. But I wrote here, this Sunday night on my computer radio show, Straight Wives, my guest will be Crystal, one of our adult children of a gay father. She will talk about her experiences of dealing with this situation and the effect it had on her. If you have children who would like to be part of this conversation, please ask them to tune in or call in as well. If they can't listen live, they can always access the show through the archives. And the date of this show was September 19th, 2010. So this is 5 years ago. I asked Crystal to write a letter for our newsletter so you can understand what some of the issues are for our children. Every situation is different, of course, but a lot of the emotional feelings are the same. In Crystal's own words, it's been a long road for me on my journey of being the daughter of a gay man. It has not been easy, but I can honestly say that the pieces of the puzzle we call life can all be put back together. The puzzle will never be the same, but you will eventually recover the pieces. My father suffers from mental illness and addiction, which has made it a very rocky past, in addition to coping with the news that he was gay. My father mistreated my mother, himself, and the person who loved and adored him the most, me. He constantly cheated on my mother with other women. This went on when I was only a child. All I knew is that I would see him come home and go through my life, and I blame my mother, since she was the one telling him to leave. I was too young to know the truth, but I never blamed myself then. As I got older, about 12, I began to see the truth. I saw how he would sneak around when my mom wasn't around. It was never my mom's fault, and I began to think that there might be something that I could be doing to stop it that would make him stop. I tried to be his friend. I tried to be his parent. I tried to be a daughter. Nothing worked. Nothing stopped the cheating, and nothing stopped the lies. Beyond the cheating with other women, I started to notice a change in his behavior. He was on the computer 24/7, and at that time we had just gotten a scanner. What he failed to realize was the last photo you scanned remains in the view mode until you delete it. Closing the program does not delete it. I would open the program and find very graphic images of himself still saved. I found pictures of other men, too. Our computer began to run slow, so I had a friend come and see what was wrong. To make a long story short, it was because too much porn, gay porn, had been downloaded on my computer. It was my computer. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to hurt my mom, and more than what she was already going through. I lived with this inside of me. I began to have panic attacks. I began to develop anxiety. I matured faster than what I should have. It affected me both physically and mentally. I wanted desperately to tell my mom, but I also wanted nothing more than to just simply have a father around, and by saying something, I felt I would be betraying my father. But by not saying something, I was betraying my mother. If I knew then what I knew now, I would have spoken up no matter what the consequence. It is important for children of a gay father to know that you cannot be silent. It will kill you inside. It will rob you of your right to live a happy, healthy life. It is your father's burden to bear, not your own. He put himself and his family in this situation, not you. My father finally came out when I was 15. He sat down with me and my mom on the couch and cried hysterically as he told us. I sat there in silence. When he was done, I shook my head and laughed, since I had known. I never had an issue with him being gay. That actually never bothered me. But I deeply resented him for hurting my mom. I resented him for making me live with his secret. I told him I already knew he was gay. Both he and my mom looked at me in disbelief. I refused to talk about it any further. That was the breaking point for my mom. she could try and compete with other women, but she couldn't compete with other men. She filed for divorce. However, since he had nowhere to go, my mom allowed him to stay in the house. For some reason, now that he was out of the closet and knew that I accepted what he felt, he felt closer to me. He even went so far as to show me pictures of his boyfriend. He would always ask that I not say anything to my mom, since it would just upset her more. Again, I was living with secrets. The little girl that begged for her mother to let her father stay now desperately wanted him just to leave. By the time the divorce was finalized, he had decided he wasn't gay. A whole other story, and wanted to stay with us. Thankfully, my mom did not let that happen. He moved about an hour and a half away. He would come back for visits to see me. That was a joke. He was only coming back to the house to use the computer and see his friends. He used me as his excuse. I had enough. This was my breaking point. I told my mom everything. I told her what I knew before he told us that he was gay. I told her about the secrets he made me keep, and I told her that when he visited, all he did was stay on the computer. The visit stopped. My mom blamed herself for the longest time. She had no idea of what was going on behind the scenes. It was never her fault, and it was never my fault. I pointed the finger of blame at my father. All life experiences take their toll, whether good or bad. I began going to a therapist, which helped tremendously. You should never be ashamed to seek help. I thought at a very young age that I could handle adult situations, and it ultimately caused me to have a nervous breakdown. Never let it get you to that point. You are human. You can only handle so much. I still have anxiety, and I deal with it every single day. It is part of me now, but I recognize it and do my best to move on. Surrounding yourself with true friends who accept you and your situation is priceless. Knowing that you are not alone and that you do not have to go through life yourself is a stepping stone to bouncing back. Laughter helps. In the beginning, you are scared, confused, broken, and angry. But there comes a time when you just have to laugh. Laughter is the best medicine. I use comedy now because I have made it through. I've moved on, and my mother has moved too. My relationship with my father comes and goes. There could be a period of a couple months that I don't hear from him, which honestly, I am okay with. Then there are other times when he will call me a couple of times a week. He's always been an all-or-nothing type person. He is still an alcoholic, which he refuses to admit, and he decided to marry another woman to prove that he was never gay. He has cheated on her with men. I visit him rarely since his living conditions are not the best. And it hurts to see someone I love so dearly struggling. I have called to help him. I have tried to love him. And I have helped him out financially. I have come to the conclusion that I just cannot do it any longer. We are civil to each other, and I know he loves me, but it is important that I keep my distance. Because when I get involved, it only ends up upsetting me and taking me back to a place that I don't want to revisit. Forgiveness is a tricky thing. But you can forgive someone, move on, and never look back, or you can forgive someone, but never forget. In my situation, I have forgiven my father, but I can never forget what my mom and I went through. I forgive him for not knowing what he wanted in life. I forgive him for being confused. I forgive him for not knowing how to control himself. I keep him at arm's length away because he still lies and he still takes advantage of people's kindness. He has so many skeletons in his closet to this day, he refuses to confront. I can't be part of the deceit, so I have to remove myself. Sometimes they leave you no other option. It was signed from Crystal, which I think is such an amazing letter with such beautiful insight from such a young lady who suffered so much through this whole ordeal. And I think the problem is that when we try to keep secrets from our children, they are really well aware of what's going on in the household. And you can see that kids today are so sophisticated in their knowledge of computers that it's really easy for them to track down what their dads are doing. We are not that in tune with it. You know, kids are way ahead of us. So what we might be looking for, like a history, you know, is certainly not going to do us any good if someone's erasing it. But these kids know how to look inside the computer and look for information. So often, it's, as it turns out, I would say in about 80% of the cases, the children do know before their mothers know. And what the problem is that they're carrying this secret with them because they're afraid if they say anything, it's going to break up the family. And I think this is very similar to children who get molested in a family. And I've had, you know, speakers on our show about that. You know, when a child is molested by a member of the family and she's afraid to tell anyone, and especially her mother, because she believes that the mother's going to turn to her and say, "You're lying," or "You're making it up," or "Why are you doing this?" And I think this is a major fear amongst teenage girls when they do get molested, so they keep it to themselves and don't say anything. And the same thing here. I think the children are so afraid, if I tell my mom, then that means their marriage is going to end and I'm going to be the one at fault. Or else my mother's going to say, "There's no way your dad could be gay. Why are you making this up?" So I think children carry the secret. And as Crystal was saying in her letter, a lot of them really do have breakdowns over this. So I think it's so important that if you can tell your children, and it could be in an age-appropriate way. In other words, you don't have to talk about sex, and you don't have to talk about sexual acts, because these are kids, and you don't want to make them feel worse about the situation than it already is. And, you know, people ask me, well, how do you tell the children? I mean, we all have different ways that we tell them. The important thing is to tell them in a way where you're not filled with anger, where you're not going to be berating their father, because you have to always remember that children are made up of two parents, a mother and a father. So when you start down-talking the father, the children feel, well, that's a part of me that she's talking about, or there's a part of me that she doesn't love. And no matter how much we say, this has nothing to do with you, the more you keep knocking their father, the more they start internalizing and believing that it is true. So you have to first process this information yourself, and then you have to have a talk with your children. And, of course, your husband should be there. Both of you should be there. And people say to me, well, how did you do it? Well, I'll make it really simple. I know that when I had to tell my daughter, she was only 13 years old, and her father did not want to tell her. But, you know, there are too many things that had gone on that she was asking me too many questions, and I didn't want to keep lying about it. So what I did is I tried to find some real positive images of actors and people that she knows and people who were gay. And I said to her, Jennifer, you know that all people are born differently. Some people are born, you know, white. Some people are born black. Some people are born tall. Some people are born to be short. Some people are thin. Some people are heavy. You know, and she would say, yep. And I would ask her to name some people in each one of these groups. And then I would say, some people are born, you know, most people are born straight, but some people are born gay. And at 13 years old today, they're pretty astute, and she would say, well, I know what that is. And I said, well, do you know anybody who's gay? And then I brought up some people that she knew, some people on television who were out, some friends that I had, because I always had gay people hanging around through my support group. And I would say, do you think there's anything wrong with it? She said, no. And then I said, people are just born differently, you know, and a lot of people don't understand that they're gay when they get married. You know, they think they're straight, but then all of a sudden, later on, they find out that those feelings they had were different kinds of feelings. And that's how I told her, and that's how it was for your father. I mean, I really try to be sensitive with her, but, and she seemed like she was kind of blindsided, even though she had seen things in the house. You know, but she still acted really shocked, and she felt very bad for her dad. You know, she was saying, oh, my God, I feel so bad for him. I said, don't feel bad for him. I said, it's not a bad thing to be gay. But I think as a young daughter, she felt, well, maybe he's lonely. Maybe, you know, he's by himself. You know, she didn't really understand either. He wasn't lonely at all. But from her perception as a daughter, she wanted to protect her father. And I think at least that was better than her not knowing. Because, once again, children ask questions, and we don't always have the right answers. But when we lie to them, eventually they find out. And then they say, If I can't trust you to tell me the truth about this, why should I trust you about any other things that come up? And that was my problem. I felt if I would lie to my children about this, then they would never know with me what to believe and what not to believe. And even if I said to them, look, you know, I kept this secret because I wasn't lying to you, but I didn't want to hurt you, then they may always believe that everything I was telling them, I was keeping a secret. So I don't regret ever telling them. I did it with compassion and with understanding. And I think that, you know, that's what we need to do, whether we feel it or we don't. I know a lot of times some of us have a hard time talking like that because it's just not how you're feeling it at the moment, and that's okay. But that doesn't mean that you can't talk like that. I mean, for the sake of the children, their concern is your concern. The mental health of your children is the greatest concern. Making sure that they grow up feeling secure with two parents. And that's why I say when you have children, it's really important not to be bashing your husband, even if he deserves it. And some of you have really horrible ex-husbands, and they do deserve it. But that's why we have support mechanisms for you, so that you can really do that somewhere else with consenting, with adults who understand the situation and with adults who have been through that situation. So if you need that kind of support, please contact me, and I'll be happy to provide it for you. But your children cannot be your best friends and your confidants when it comes to this. And there's no sense trying to win them over as your support team, because this is not helping your children. And I know that for every mother that I've met, their children is the number one priority. So saying they're a priority and making them the priority could be two very different things. Making them a priority means that you're looking into their mental health, what's best for them, what's going to hurt them the least, and even if it hurts you more. Once again, take no responsibility for the marriage breaking up. This has nothing to do with you. You know, you didn't want the marriage to break up either. Unfortunately, their father is gay, which he, I always tell people, maybe at the time he married you, he was questioning himself, but he loved me enough, or he loved your mom enough. Well, I tell him me because I was a mother. I tell them they loved you enough that they wanted to marry you and make it work, but they just couldn't help themselves. So I always tried to make my children, when they were teenagers, feel good about themselves. And if they had a positive image of their dad, then they could feel better about themselves. Whether it was true or not is not the issue. That's how I try to make my children feel secure. So I don't know if you have anything to say about this or any questions you'd like to ask. You can feel free to email me. And I do have a question. Somebody just emailed me in. Let me just check it out. And they said, Bonnie, it's great that you want to tell your children. Does it matter if they're a male or a female, how it affects them? Okay, and that's from Jamea. I think that's how you pronounce her name, Jamea in Florida. All I can say, Jamea, is that I think that sometimes when a father is gay, a son does personalize it more. The first thing I think my children want to know is, can I catch this? And I would say it's not a disease. It's not something that you catch, because it is a worryment to children. I knew some wonderful girls. In fact, one of them will be on my show in September, who went through this many years ago with their father, and she questioned her sexuality the whole time through her teenage years, because she didn't want to be gay. So she became kind of promiscuous to keep proving that, no, I'm not gay. You know, our kids don't really know how to handle it because we don't know how to handle it. But it's really important to reassure your children that this is not something that you catch. There is always that possibility, because a lot of the population, 10%, is gay. So, but you have to reassure your children that if they are gay, then it's fine. It will have no bearing on how much you love them, or that you won't love them any differently. And you have to say that to them, even if it's not true. I mean, look, nobody wants to have to hear that their child is gay. And for those of you who have been listening to me and know me, then you know that I had a daughter who was a lesbian. And, of course, when the news came out, when she told me, I was really upset. And I wasn't upset because it was gay. I was just upset because I felt it would be such a hard life for her, knowing what her father had gone through, but I was not about to make her go through that. And so I embraced her and encouraged her to have her girlfriends. I used to make them part of my family. And unfortunately, my daughter passed away in 2002 from a 3.5-year heroin addiction. But unfortunately, you know, even so, that was not because she was gay, and that's why it's so important. Hold on for one moment. Let's see if that soothes that. Hello?
Hello!
Suzette, I was just about to give up on you.
Oh, don't give up on
me.
People
are sick of hearing of listening to me for a half hour, making them feel worse than they already felt when they got on, signed on here talking about their children. But thankfully, you've come along to save and brighten the night.
Oh, please, my apologies, radio listeners. I am so very, very sorry. Charge it to my head, not my heart. I went out to dinner, and then I sat back down. I was like, oh Lord.
That's right, Suzette. I was about to sing some final goodbye songs to them.
Oh, Lord, from the Glee Club. From the Glee Club.
I was almost ready to do that because they were kind of getting tired of just listening to what I had to say. So I thought that you could really add some zest to this conversation.
Oh, wow. Well,
I don't think I could ever be a preacher. I think that's too hard a job. I'm not good solo at all.
Oh,
but how are you doing?
I am doing just fine, just fine. With the exception of having a little bit of, I think my senior moments are starting to kick in, Bonnie. You know, you always talking about that I'm much younger than you, but I tell you, judging from the night, I think my mind is about to start catching up.
You know, that's very possible. Oh, that's okay. It happens to me all the time. I'm not quite sure what I'm doing, where I'm doing it, and what appointments I have to keep looking. I didn't used to be that way. But you're here, and there's a few things I did want to talk to you about. Because I just got this really exciting newsletter from you. And, you know, it says here, what's love got to do with it?
Yes.
That's like one of my favorite songs by Tina Turner. Is love just a secondhand emotion?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what some people think, right?
That's very true.
So you do have a newsletter now, and can people get on the mailing list for that?
They sure can. You know where they have to come to, though, right, Bonnie?
BonK@AOL.com, and I'll send it to you. Yeah, they can come to me. Yeah, but they can go to you, too.
Oh, yes, they can come to www.SuzetteRHinton, that's HINTON.com. And, yes, my newsletter goes out bi-monthly, usually around the 1st and the 15th of each month.
Okay, and there's some really interesting articles in here, and, you know, this prompted me to talk to you tonight. You have on here, Ask Suzette, and the question was, if a man were sitting in front of you and you could ask him anything about men, what would it be? So tonight I told women that we would talk a little bit about when you start dating again.
Yes.
And I want to bring this up because, you know, I was speaking to one of our wonderful women in, you know, our network in the last few days. And she was married for a long time, and she's just, you know, gotten free. And she met a couple of guys, and she had a couple of dates with a couple of people, and she's older. And she hasn't been in the dating world for 30 years. So I know that you say there are lots of good men out there. Are there? Or some good men, anyway. But the thing is that there are also a lot of broken men out there. My thought was to her is this. You know, it's one thing when you're both 20 years old or 25 years old and starting out because you don't have, like, a lot of baggage unless you come from, like, a really screwed-up family. But I'm saying basically when people are starting out, they're starting out by feeling good about themselves, about the marriage. They're more flexible. They're more willing to compromise, do things together as a couple. When you meet somebody and you're 55 or 60 years old, they're already broken, or they've been broken, in many cases, you know, they came out of a bad marriage or a bad mm-hmm. relationship. And, you know, they've already developed all these kind of addictions. It could be gambling, smoking, drugs, whatever it is. And I know a lot of my older friends who are in their later 50s and early 60s say there's just nobody good out there. And I know you don't believe that, you know, that there are some good men, but people really have a hard time finding them. And my concept is that by the time you meet them at that age, which, you know, is a little bit older than you, but, you know, kind of in that age range, mm-hmm. a lot of these men have already gone through a lot of life experiences, and they're already molded. How do you undo that?
Well, I don't think it's so much that you undo it. I think you look for somebody who has gone through some things, but they've worked through it, you know, because there are men out there that, you know, over the course of time of getting over different hurts or whatever, that they really have taken the time to reflect and to do some work. They might not have gone to, you know, a psychiatrist, or they may not have gone to a relationship coach, but a lot of them, especially if they have some type of a spiritual base, you know, a sense of connectedness to something bigger, whether it's God or whoever, but they have a sense of being connected to something bigger than themselves or wanting something more for themselves, that I'm finding that there are men like that. Because, like I tell some of my friends, you know, who are like, we're all the good men. I'm like, well, I don't know where y'all are at, but people around me are meeting people. And, you know, and of course, most people around me are over 30. You know, they're in their 40s, some in their mid-40s, and they're meeting really nice men. And one of the complaints I hear from men a lot of times is that they're out there, but the women don't know how to recognize them. That they're out there and they get overlooked many times, because mm-hmm. they don't fit a certain profile, or they don't mm-hmm. come with a whole lot of game. You know, they might not have all that swagger. And the thing about it, Bonnie, that I found, too, is a lot of women who are older still have a high school mentality when it comes to what they want in a man. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. to myself, wait a minute, you don't look the way you looked when you were in your 20s, but yet you want a man that's got, you know, bulging muscles and all these different things. And I'm thinking, you've got to be stuck at high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
so
some people
I think
really
sometimes, yeah, I think sometimes our preferences don't mature as fast as our bodies do. And especially if you've, you know, not gotten it right, there tends to still be this sense of, I still want to look for the same kind of man. I just want him to treat me different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
I think that's when you're younger. But by the time I think you reach between your 50s and 60s or plus, you know, we're looking at older men now. You know, who are in that
think.
Age range.
You
I don't
would
know.
Think.
I just don't think that.
Yeah.
I think that they're coming with a lot of stuff with them. You know, especially if they have had bad marriages, they came from bad families, they haven't worked, they haven't done this. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying there's not good men out there, because I know there are.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's what you're willing to, you know, put up with at this point of your life. Like some of my friends are saying, you know what, it's just not worth it. You know, I'm happy. And I say to women also, when you get older, you know, you kind of get into your own rhythm, and a lot of times, of course, I always tell women you have to really love yourself before you can love anybody else, because if you're a needy person, then you're going to need someone. That's not going to work out either. So loving yourself is fine, and you can be happy by yourself. There's no shame in that if you want to, right?
No shame in it at all, but my thing is if that's what a person really, really wants, I say go
mm-hmm.
for it. But many,
mm-hmm.
many times what it is they're frustrated or they're still hurt, and they never
mm-hmm.
got over their hurt. So every time they date somebody, it compounds their hurt, you know. And whatever's not healed in us is going to attract the same things to us, you know. So sometimes women
I'll tell
are
you
complaining.
One issue that I think, right, but I'll tell you one issue I think that we have that most other women don't. I know that there are, I was talking earlier tonight that, you know, 50% of marriages in this country end in divorce. And this is when you have a straight wife and a straight husband. Because people get married when they're younger, they don't really know the person, they outgrow the person, they're not moving in the same direction. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the way life is today. But my point was that sometimes, you know, people, you know, once again, when you're married to a gay husband, you have other issues because a marriage just isn't ending for that reason. In most of our cases, we find, you know, for those who find out that our husbands are gay, then we find out that they were cheating and having sex, you know, while they were married to us, especially about 20% of our women who end up with STDs. So the point that I'm trying to make is that a lot of our women really have trust issues when they start new relationships.
Yeah.
And like you said before, and I really admire you when you say this, you can't bring your old fears into these new relationships. You know, you have to drop them, you know, because you can't take with you what was, you know, you'll never have a happy relationship. You have to keep questioning somebody because you don't trust them or because you find it so hard to trust again. But I don't know, how do you feel, like, how do you get rid of that distrust?
Well, I think it's kind of twofold because, you know, we were talking about how some people have tried dating after they've gotten up, you know, gotten out of a really bad relationship with their ex-gay husband or whatever. And many times the people have not really, really fully taken time to really, you know, get free of the residue and the stigma and all the yucky stuff that's still stuck to you, almost like the kind of film when you're sitting, you're walking somewhere and it's humid and you have that little sticky feeling. All that stuff is still there. And yet we think that, okay, well, I'm done with him. Okay, I'll date somebody else without really working on ourselves. So I think sometimes the frustration that we have is because we have not worked on ourselves. We haven't done it. So that means we don't have the wherewithal to date somebody else, because even you know, normally just getting to know somebody, especially getting to know someone of the opposite sex, it takes a certain degree of energy. It takes a certain degree, you know what I'm saying? You can't be already broke down, already compromised 95% of you and have the energy that it takes to get to know somebody else. So I think that's why I say people need to take time after they've gone through something as traumatic. And we have to really face the fact it was traumatic. For many of us, it's chronic because it happened over years, but it still doesn't make it any less traumatic. And when you've gone through any kind of life trauma, whether it's a trauma to your body, you know, it takes time for that to heal. Same thing with our emotions. Same thing with it. And so I always advocate getting a relationship coach. Now, I advocate that if the person is ready to move forward. If that person still is dealing with a lot of psychic pain, a lot of deep-seated things have been stirred up, then I would suggest them actually seeing a psychiatrist or a therapist to work through some of that stuff so they can move forward. So they actually can, without continuing to put that car in reverse all the time, always going back to my ex-husband, always going back, reverting back what my ex-husband did, what my ex-husband did. You know what my ex-husband did? You know what he said? And that was one of the main things for me when I'm working with ladies who have been through this. One of the hardest things to get them to stop doing is looking in the rearview mirror. That's one of the hardest things, because they always want to revert back. They always want to revert back because that's what's on their minds. That's where they still are emotionally. They're still stuck right there. So over half my time with coaching clients is helping them to get unstuck. So that they can move forward.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. It's like the rearview mirror that's always following you. You're always looking back.
Always checking
ahead,
that rearview mirror. And you can't drive forward checking that rearview mirror. I had to tell one lady, I said, sweetie, I said, darling, I said, okay. We had had about three sessions, and I had let her purge because I think there needs to be a time for purging. I think every wound needs a witness. So I'll spend the first moments letting people purge, let them get it out, because many of them have not had someone to really listen who understood it, so they really need to get it out. But then after a while, I'll say to them, okay, sweetie, we have exhausted this subject. We have done it. Now, let's put this car in drive. And even if we go real slow, we still got to move forward. We got to move forward. We got to move forward. So I really think that is very key, because one of the things I've found is really half of dating is recognizing who's not for you and not spending a whole lot of your time trying to make something happen with somebody who's just not the right fit. I was using a metaphor with some friends of mine about, you know, when you throw your net into the ocean, you get everything that's in the ocean. So if you cast, you know, they always say there's plenty of fish in the sea, and the truth is there are, but there's also a rusty can, an old boot, starfish, you know, all this stuff is in the sea. And the fisherman does not blame the rusty boot. The fisherman does not blame the tin can for being in the sea. The fisherman has to know how to recognize fish. And the fisherman has to know how to recognize what kind of fish he or she wants to take home. And I think what happens with so many of us, because we haven't taken the time, first of all, to heal, secondly, to find out what we want, and third, how to recognize it, that we take a tin can home with us just because it's in the net and try to put salt and pepper on that bad boy and fry it up, and it's not going to work.
And that's what I tell women also, but I feel there's still valuable experiences. I was telling this woman today, and I'm writing about this in my newsletter for her, that these are what I call starter relationships, that after you've been void of being in a true relationship for some women 20, 30, 40 years, and now you just want to get out and feel like what it's like to be a woman again, you know, there's going to be a lot of screw-ups along the way because you haven't even been out there. You don't know what to expect. You're liable to start believing someone even though it's not sincere. But I always say get the practice. Because you can't really become good at what you want until you find out what you don't want. And I think there's nothing wrong in what I call starter relationships. You know, you start off with somebody and you find out, well, you know what, I like this, I like that, but I don't like this or that. My next person I'm going to meet, I'll know more what I do want. And I think that by going out and meeting new men and dating men, you don't have to make any kind of physical commitment or emotional commitment, but if you want to, you can make a physical one if you feel that attracted to someone. But you don't want to feel used. I mean, there has to be some kind of emotional connection there, too. But it doesn't have to be forever, and it doesn't have to be to get married. It can just be because you want to spend time with somebody as long as they're treating you well, not taking advantage of you, and both of you have something in it for you. But when it doesn't work out after, you know, few months, or, you know, you have to cut your losses and not just keep staying in there because you don't know how to break up. They can't go repeating your problems of the past. It can't be that, well, maybe I have to give more of a chance. If you know it's not right, then just end it and move on. You're not married. There's nothing wrong with dating people. You know, people don't say anything when they dump us. I don't feel bad about that. They just do it.
So I think
every experience is a really good experience, and we should take advantage of it. One of our women posted tonight. I just want to tell you this before you tell me. I thought this was so great. I'm going to send this to you, although I posted it on my Facebook page. So maybe you can take a look at that. There's a little girl holding, you know, a broom and a paintbrush, because the saying says, be with someone who makes you happy, and she crosses out with. And I love this. Now it reads, be someone who makes you happy. And I think that's what it's about. You have to be happy with yourself first before you even should be with somebody. Because if you're not happy with yourself, nobody could be there to make you happy. That's not their job. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's so true. That is so, so very true. What I was going to say when you were talking about getting back out there and everything, I wholeheartedly agree. I think as a caution, however, it really depends how quickly you get back out there. Really depends on how the level of devastation you've been through, because if you're not haven't attained a certain degree of wholeness, and you put yourself back out there, you'll get eaten alive.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women, because they have not felt a connection, have not had intimate love, you know, have had this confusing, isolating, crazy, you know, weirdness for so long. If they get out there immediately, then every shark, every game player, even if he's heterosexual, will pick up on that smell of blood. Sharks are also in the ocean. And if you don't, you never jump into the ocean bleeding, because you will attract sharks. And so many of us, because we've been hurt and we're so desperate to be loved, we go back into the dating world bleeding. And you can't go back in the dating world bleeding. You can't, because it will always attract sharks. And a lot of times, even if there are nice men around, usually the ones that get to you first are the sharks. And if you don't see the difference, because this guy is really paying attention to you, or he's telling you how sexy you are, or he's telling you how pretty you are, or he likes your opinion, or whatever that thing is that makes you feel like there's potential in this guy to give you what your ex-husband didn't give you,
uh-huh.
You know, it can really, depending on how the severity, it can really add insult to injury. And that's why I say even if the ladies get back out there, which I totally agree, you got to get back up in the saddle again. That's the only way you're going to know you can trust again. But I also say, depending on the degree of hurt and all of that, I say have a coach while you're out there, so that person can help you keep your objectivity, can point out things to you that you might don't see, so that person can be in your head with help and with objectivity and with light, because you will not see an unhealed person. They might think they see, but they don't see. They don't see. And so I just wanted to add that little piece to it, because I think it's very important.
It is important. And I think that, you know, it's very important that you learn how to go out there, make mistakes, not be upset by it, be okay with it, not beat yourself up if it doesn't work out. I mean, okay. Suzette, I hate to put you on the spot, but I will. I mean, I know that you
You know, I just love you, girl.
But, I mean, I know that you finally found, you know, your real love, and you really worked at it with Robert, so that you would definitely have a happy marriage and life after, a happily ever after life. But were you going out with other people before him?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so,
that's fine, I definitely
was. It's an experience, right?
Yeah,
you know,
it was an experience.
Put yourself out
definitely.
There to first find out, right?
Yeah, and I definitely put myself out there. The thing about it, though, I put myself out there because I was very desperate. I was very hungry. I was so hungry for genuine intimacy. It's almost like, you know, at first you're just so relieved to get out of a bad marriage. You're so relieved that you don't, you're not really thinking about anybody. You just want to escape with your life. and with a little bit of your brain matter left. You just want to escape. But then it's almost like for me, it's like I was out and I was, you know, you go through your divorce and you go through your custody battles and you go through your, you know, your monies and your all this alimonies and all these different things. You just go, it's like you're in a survival in the beginning. But then when I cleared that survival thing, it was almost like what I hear crack addicts say. They say they had, when they have their first hit, they feel like they're just fine. You know, they feel like they're just fine. But about 10 days later, a craving for it hits them so hard till it's like that's all they can think about. And I felt that way after, it was like after I got out of my bad marriage and everything, all of a sudden a hunger pang hit me so hard that I was desperate to have a sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. It was like I looked back and I looked at all these years of being deprived.
Mm-hmm.
All these years of and all the things that I was told about myself and all this, and it was like all of a sudden this overwhelming hunger came over me, and it scared me because this was my second time. The first time I didn't go through that. The first time that we broke up and divorced, I did not go through that. The second time, it was insatiable. It was just insatiable. And so there were three men that were kind of hanging around me. And I remember telling God, I said, God, I said, I'm going to sleep with one of them. I started praying. I said, just don't let the wrong one get next to me. I said, because after I've already gone through everything I've gone through with my ex-husband, I cannot stand another rejection. That's exactly what I prayed. I said, I don't want to do this, but I'm telling you, if you don't get these men away from me, I'm going to sleep with one of them. I said, but God, please don't let somebody else get next to me that's going to blame me for wanting intimacy, that's going to shame me and make me feel bad about my own sexuality, that's going to make me feel like something's wrong with me. I said, I can't deal with a man. I don't want a hit it and quit it man. I don't want somebody that just wants to have sex with me and then they're going to get on and get off. I said, because whether they're heterosexual or not, it's going to make me feel even worse and even more worthless than I felt like in my marriage. I said, whoever it is, I want them to enjoy it, and I want to be able to just let my hair down and just swing from the chandelier if I want to. That was my prayer. And I want you to know, the person that got next to me, we swung from the chandelier for about 2 years. Because I couldn't take another rejection. I needed to become comfortable in my sexuality. And I think that was something that even more so undergirded my, it gave me, you know, we were talking about how I grew up, but I grew up also in a household and in an environment where a woman's sexuality was scorned. And so I still had some issues, though I loved sex and I enjoyed it. When he would tell me I was a nympho or all these different things, something about that brought a shame that was deeper than his words, because I'd always been taught, directly or indirectly, that sex was wrong. That, you know, to feel sexual, a woman feeling sexual, a woman asking for what she wants in the bedroom, you know, a woman initiating. I mean, even my femininity was assaulted. You know, I had to dress in clothes that were too big for me, and I felt shame because if I wore anything that made a man want me, then that meant I was a loose woman. So I had all this, still had all this stigma on me when it came to my sexuality. And I knew part of my healing was not just to be wanted by a man again, but also to give myself permission to be sexual.
And I think that's so important for women who have grown up in restrictive types of religious families. And now they're older. They missed out on making love, you know, and doing it the right way because, you know, they were stuck in the wrong relationship to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to give yourself permission to get the enjoyment out of life that was meant for you. We didn't take any vows. We're not nuns. We're human beings, and we're women.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we're entitled to have some of that sexual joy that was missing from our lives all along.
Yes, and I can tell, you know, the women out there, especially the ones, like you said, that have grown up in religious backgrounds where, you know, all they heard was fornication is wrong and all these different things are wrong. It is quite different, you know, to come out of a marriage with a gay person where maybe you got married thinking, okay, I'm finally married, now I can have sex without feeling guilty. But then to marry somebody who doesn't want to have sex with you, that's just torture. And
yeah,
so I just decided I was not going to be tortured anymore. I said, you know what, God, you're going to have to forgive me. But I refuse to not have sex in my marriage and then get out of my marriage and still not have sex. I refuse. I can't live like that. I can't go out like that. I can't go out like that.
And you have to practice, so when your soulmate came along, you'd be ready, right?
Oh, dear, yes. I was ready for it.
You were seasoned by then, right?
I have to say, I am very comfortable now. I'm very comfortable in my sexuality now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that many of our women
just dream about, though. You know, many of them are thinking, will this ever happen for me? And you can tell them yes, right?
Yes, I can tell them 100% yes. But we have to work harder because we got to overcome what we've been through. You can't just sit back on the sidelines and just wait for it to fall in your lap. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get involved in your own healing. You got to get involved. You got to. You got to fight for you. You got to fight for you.
And I'd like to remind women that if you need help along the way, Suzette is available. Even if you don't live in North Carolina, she can do it by phone, by Skype, however you want to do it, right?
Whatever way you want to do it, face chat, Skype, Google Hangout, you know, telephone, whichever way it works.
You were very technologically connected. Right.
I'm trying to be. I'm intrigued with it. I love it.
Yeah, and I'm so resistant to it. But that's all right. You never know. I might get better, right?
Hey, that's right.
I might learn your email address one day, right? Here's a good idea. Maybe you can become SuzetteVernon.com.
You know what? I'm thinking about doing that. I got to keep the hints in because of my books. But I definitely am going to add that other domain as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be good for you.
Yeah, and let the Suzette R. Hinton roll into the Suzette Vernon until everybody gets used to it.
Exactly. I think that'll be easier. I looked it up and it seems available.
You think that'll be easier?
It's certainly easier than what? How about Suzette Coach?
I don't know, because then people be saying, hello, Mrs. Coach.
How about Coach Suzette?
Now, that one, you know what? That would work.
Let me check that out and see if anybody else has it. No, it looks good. Let me look up the domain. Hold on one second. We're going to find this out tonight. We're going to do something great on this show.
Friday is the term, but she hates my domain, y'all. She hates it.
Well, I mean, it's really hard for me, but something like Coach Suzette would be easy. Let's see if it's around. Coach Suzette.com. And it says, somebody took it.
Oh, man.
So you waited too long.
I waited too long, man.
Well, wait a second, Coach. Thoughts is up. Somebody took that too.
How about my coach do that?
How about, well, there's some other good ones here. Let's not give up. Suzette.coach. Okay, how about my coach, Suzette? Let's try that. I do like that.
My coach. Oh, yeah, my coach sounds good.
My coach, Suzette. Okay. My coach. Somebody better not steal this tonight. And then try to spell it for you. Yeah, you better buy it before somebody else does. It is available.
Okay. I'm going to have to get it.
Right, my coach Suzette. Now, that's easy for me to tell people, right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And then
cool.
You can just tap it, point it to your other, you know, point it, and it'll connect you right there.
That's true. I'm going to have to do that.
When you buy the domain, I'll put in a plug for GoDaddy because they're really good to work with.
Yeah, because that's where my other ones are.
I love GoDaddy because they really work with you, and also that you can have them point it to your other one, so when people go to Coach, you know, my Coach Suzette, it'll go right over to your other site.
I like that.
Yeah,
like
so you don't have to get another site. You just have it pointed.
Yeah, that's right. I can have. That's true. My Coach Suzette, I like that.
Right. So, everyone, I want you to realize that it's only going to be a short time from now when you can reach Suzette. At a website that you can remember. But that's
yes,
very memorable,
yes.
MyCoachSuzette.com.
Yes, but in the meantime, I don't want to go to it and be like, okay, they said MyCoachSuzette.com, and it's not even there.
Right. I said coming soon to a neighborhood near you.
You.
So in the meantime,
yes.
Yeah. Give them your email. Give them your website address. Go ahead.
My website address is www.suzetterkenton.com. And Bonnie, can I tell them about my upcoming virtual summit?
I'm sorry. Please do. Go right ahead.
Yes. August 10th through the 14th. My first annual virtual summit titled You Asked, Good Men Answered. We'll convene. It's going to be a free broadcast nightly, two speakers per night. The first speaker is up at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I think that's 4 o'clock Pacific Time. Then the second speaker is up at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And these are 10 men who are giving you the 411 on men, dating, and relationships. So for those of you out there that want to start dating again, you feel like you're in a place where you can, or even if you don't feel like you're in a place that you can, but you want to know how to recognize a good man, it's so great to hear good men talk about men because they talk about everything. And so I even learned some things, even being a married woman, I learned some things that made me even more aware, even more sensitive to my own husband. So regardless of where you're at in your journey, I think this virtual summit is going to be super fantastic. And you would go to my website and register. Even though it's free and the registration is free, I still want you to be able to register so I can give you more information and all of that. But it is going to be very transformational, and I don't want you to miss it.
Suzette, if you'd be kind enough to send me all the information, you know, I'll post it on my private, you know, Facebook room and get the word out to our women. You know, so if you send it to me, I'll post it by tomorrow.
I can do that.
So even though you haven't been on here very long, it's time for us to go anyway.
Yes.
But thank God you got here. That's all I can say. Some people were praying that you would get here. Trust me. They were
Really? Were you singing, Bonnie?
excuse me.
Were you singing?
I was about to sing some song for them, but that's why I'm sure they're glad you got here. But anyway, I really do appreciate your being here. You're so inspirational to me and to the women who listen to you. And the words that you say are always so on target. And I look forward to having you back here next month. And
yes.
For those of you who are listening, we have some really great shows coming up next week. Alexa Servadidia will be with us. She's a therapist in New York, and she has a healing show, Insight into Healing. And Alexa and I are good friends. She has a computer television show, and she'd love to have you on her show, Suzette, if you can arrange it not to conflict with your schedule one night.
I would love it.
Kathy Holguin will be here the following week. She's one of our straight wife therapists, a member of our group in California. And Kathy always has some really good healing words also. So Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or any time thereafter. I know most of you listen after the show, but that's fine at your own convenience. Suzette, thank you a million. You know I love you.
I love you too, Bonnie.
All right, and give Robert a big hug for me.
I will.
Everybody who's making you that happy is fine with me. All right, so I'll talk to you all soon, and love to all of you, and have a wonderful week.
All right,
good night.
Good night.
Good night.